Meeting of the Senate State Affairs Committee to order. We have President Senator Ellis, Senator Taylor, myself, Chairman Senator Lehman. We have several earth-shattering major bills before us today. At least that's what each one of you thinks, right? Who has one of them? They are. And we'll take up first House Bill 491. We have Representative Veazey, the prime sponsor. You wish to speak to your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the bill is self-explanatory. The motivation behind the bill was I happened to sit on the Revenue Finance Subcommittee and go through the Alaska Science and Technology Foundation annual report and fiscal report every year. It was apparent that the annual report and the fiscal report are not on concurrent time frames. The executive director was asked if it wouldn't be more helpful for everybody, both the agency and for the legislature, if the reports coincided, so that the legislative budget and audit report and the reports that come out of the administration from the Department of Revenue and the Alaska Science and Technology Foundation were on a current or concurrent fiscal year. It was agreed that they were, so I put the bill in for that simple housekeeping change.
We had another bill last week before us that said that those reports should be done by December 16th.
Yeah. Well,
and
but
yours
the
is January 15th of the, it's a month later, right?
Well, the I'm familiar with the, you're talking about it's similar to HB 530, which is really addressing a, I believe, a totally different report. I don't think it addresses this agency. By statute, the Alaska Science and Technology Foundation, and that's the statute that we're changing here, does a annual report, calendar year annual report. This brings their report onto a fiscal year, and that it's saying that their report would be here by January 15th. That date is totally immaterial. That date really is what's in the statute now. I believe we may have added, taken 5 days off of it or something. It was January 15th. I can't remember whether
it was January 30th, and now
we're making it
January 15th.
That date totally
fiscal year instead of calendar year.
Right, and the idea being that the report would be here when the legislature convenes. That day could just as easily be December 15th. It wouldn't matter because what we're doing now is instead of having 30 days between the end of the calendar year closeout and the report due date, there would be almost 6 months.
So we're How about the foundation? Do they support this?
Yes, the executive director was supportive of it. Quite frankly, they were scared that this bill would be used as a vehicle for appropriating all the funds in the Alaska Science and Technology Foundation to the general fund. But I told them that this vehicle wouldn't work in that way.
Any questions from committee members? Anybody in the audience wish to testify on House Bill 491?
I have a statement more than I can.
Senator Taylor?
We did have legislation. I think it was that governor's omnibus bill or something that had several pages within it that talked about whether or not reports should be annual or semi-annual. We changed a whole bunch of them to every 2 years.
Biennial. Annual or biennial.
Right.
Which means every 2 years.
Right. That's what I was trying to say. What did I say? Semi?
That's two
biennial.
A year.
Biennial. Right. So that it would seem logical that if, in fact, that's good policy, that we might want to consider at least including this legislation within it. If, in fact, however, that legislation does violate the single subject rule, which Senator Ellis pointed out to us in a memorandum, which I think is correct, by the way. I guess what I'm saying is I'm not sure which way we want to go here, whether we're better off going with separate individual bills for each one of these things that people wish to accomplish, as Representative Veazey has done here, or whether we should try to make one of those omnibus things work. But
Mr. Chairman, if I may comment, the vehicle that Senator Taylor refers to was not before us at the time I filed this bill. I have not made an effort. I have not made an effort to see if this could be incorporated into the other. I felt it was pretty small subject matter. It is possible, certainly, if you have a bill of a similar title, that it could be incorporated.
Well, my only thought is that to be consistent with some of the others, that we consider making that date December 16th. If that makes sense for the others, then it probably makes sense for
the only comment I would make is that House Bill 530 is in the State Affairs Committee at this time, and we do have some problems with some of the things in the bill. The time frame between the closeout of the year and the receipt of an audited report is, in my opinion, in some cases too long.
Right.
And 6 months for an unaudited report is just an unreasonable length of time. So that's another reason I haven't really looked at trying to incorporate this into that.
Well, do you want to amend to the 15th, or do you want to just leave this one?
To December 16th? Would you have any problems amending that to December 16th? Do you think the foundation would? They could still complete it?
Well, it would give them 5.5 months instead of 30 days to do their report.
That's plenty of time. I'll look, yeah.
I would move that we amend page 1, line 6, from taking out the word January, insert the word December, taking out the number 15, insert the number 16.
Everybody understand that? We don't need to have it in writing. Any audience wish to comment on that proposed amendment? Any objection by committee members? Hearing none, amendment carries.
I'd move that the bill as amended to be moved from committee with individual recommendations.
Any objection? Bill's on its way.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Al.
Thanks for joining us. Next, take up House Bill 299. An act relating to revocation of a driver's license for illegal possession or use of a controlled substance, et cetera.
Use it and lose it.
Mr. Chairman, may I join you here?
You're certainly welcome to join us. You're always welcome to join us.
No judge except Judge Kraft ever used it.
Representative Toohey.
Thank you, Chairman Lehman, and members of the committee, for this opportunity to speak about House Bill 299. There's no doubt that dangerous associations of controlled substances and alcohol with driving begins at an early age. Recent data from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration indicates that among high school drivers 16 to 17 years old, the alcohol fatality rate is nearly twice as high as for drivers 25 and older. The rate for 18 to 20-year-olds is nearly three times as high. It cannot be stressed enough that usage of alcohol or controlled substance can severely impair one's ability to drive in a responsible manner. Driving is a privilege looked forward to by all youngsters. Loss of this privilege can be a powerful deterrent to drugs or alcohol use or possession. House Bill 299 addresses this. It provides one of the strongest possible incentives for our children to say no. It gives our youth a reason to say no, that it is acceptable and easily understood by their peers. It also offers positive reinforcement to alcohol and drug-free teenagers by maintaining their eligibility and privilege to drive. This proposed legislation is known as Use It, Lose It Bill. A minor who is old enough to have either a permit or a license to drive would lose that license, permit, or privilege if the minor possessed, used, or consumed a controlled substance or alcohol. If any person has had his or her license revoked, suspended, or limited within the preceding 10 years, the reinstatement fee will be the original reinstatement fee will, for the first-time offender will be $100. The second time will be an increase to $250. And this increase was recommended from the House Task Force on Alcohol and Alcohol Abuse. The bill is supported by the Department of Public Safety, the Alaska Medical Association, the Alaska Council on Prevention of Alcohol and Drug Abuse, Alaskans for Drug-Free Youth, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, the Alaska Peace Officers Association, the Alaska Federation of Native Sobriety Movement, the Governor's Advisory Board on Alcohol and Drug Abuse, and the Mayor's Task Force on Substance Abuse in Ketchikan, and the Alaska Association of Chief of Police. Although there is a cost to the Department of Public Safety, the revenue generated would offset the cost, and a positive revenue stream would be actually anticipated. It would also enable the state to access additional federal funds. There is a zero fiscal note from the Department of Law. There's also a letter of intent attached. If this proposal achieves what we intended to achieve, the savings in lives, as well as the savings in alcohol and drug treatment costs, could be tremendous. Let's help our youth make it easier just to say no. I would appreciate your support and would be happy to respond to any questions. Margaret Knuth from the Department of Law and Mike Ford from Legal Services are here also to respond to questions. Thank you.
Any questions, Rep. Toohey? Senator Taylor?
Yeah. Forgive me on this one, Cynthia. I should have thought of it earlier. I don't see it in here, and I'm concerned. The revocation, if you will, or suspension of the person's driving privilege when they have overcome this period of time and they wish it reinstated, do they have to provide the department with a completed SR-22?
SR-22 is the $2,500 insurance. Is that what you're saying? No, they do not.
Why would we want to allow young people who are intoxicated, who have had problems with drinking, why would we want to allow them back on the roads without proving to us that the department that they have insurance?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Margot Knute with the Department of Law Criminal Division. Senator Taylor, I believe that public safety was concerned that this is a situation where you're mostly revoking the privilege to drive rather than somebody who necessarily or usually is already licensed and driving. And I don't recall whether Ms. Hensley is out of town today. So
this was asked at one or the other and satisfied the questionnaire view.
Rafizi?
I would like to clarify for Senator Taylor, this is not a DWI or drunk driving bill. This is a penalty for minor consuming driving. We still have our drunk driving laws. They're totally separate from this. This could be a minor consuming at a friend's party or at their own party or on the beach somewhere. It's a administrative penalty for a minor consuming.
Yeah, I understand that aspect of it. But people get their licenses revoked every day in this state that have never had any contact with alcohol. You can get your driver's license revoked and suspended for merely a 90-day period for merely a point violation. You coast through too many stop signs. You speed too many times. You have a negligent driving or a reckless driving conviction. It has nothing to do with drinking. It has nothing to do with drinking and cars. And in this instance, we could obviously have a group of kids partying on the beach someplace,
right,
mile away from the nearest car. And so I can understand that aspect. But why in the world would we want to, on the one hand, say that alcohol and automobiles shouldn't mix, and here's a good way to slow down your alcohol use as teenagers, and at the same time turn around and say, you've been prevented from getting a driver's license now for X number of years because of your bad drinking habits, but now we're going to give you a driver's license because you pay a $250 fine. With a guy who's never had a problem with drinking, he's got to go get an SR-22. He could be 18 also. If he's going to have had a license for a couple of years, lost it because of points violation, he's got to go get an SR-22 before he can get his license back.
Through the chair, Senator Taylor, it's just been brought to my attention that probably the genesis of it in this bill is that under existing law, 2815-185, which provides for the court revocation of a minor's license to drive, there's a specific provision saying, notwithstanding everything else upon conviction of offense specified in the section, the department may not require proof of financial responsibility before restoring or issuing the person's driver's license. And this was enacted in 1988. I do not know what the motivation was for not requiring SR-22 in these court revocations for use-it-lose-it situations, but it would have created a problem to say, in a court revocation, we won't require it, but in an administrative revocation, we will. And I think it's for that consistency that that's where it's coming from today.
Well, don't all court revocations on everyone other than a minor in these circumstances require an SR-22?
I believe that is correct, and I don't know if there are other exceptions. None come to my mind right off, but one
don't
was...
Do all administrative revocations require an SR-22?
I don't believe that is so. I would have to look at the regulations. I believe we do follow court requirements, that is, whatever the judicial prerequisites.
No, I meant administratively. If you lose your license for 90 days on a administrative revocation, don't you have to have an SR-22 before you get it back?
Certainly in most circumstances.
If the revocation is because you're driving while intoxicated, if you're...
No, it doesn't have a thing to do with booze. There are lots of people out there get revoked every day for speeding, revoked for literally moving traffic violations. You get 2 points here, 4 points there. Pretty soon they take it away.
Most of the 14 to 16 or 18-year-olds are under their parents because they're driving their parents' car. Many of them are, and so when you get a permit, I believe, and I might be wrong, that your parent has to say, "This is my child is going to be driving. I take responsibility. He will be driving my car, and yes, I do have insurance."
Right. Agreed.
I expect
that's for the permit. Yeah, I'm talking the 16-year-old to 21-year-old. That's 5 years during which a kid can be driving out there, and he's driving a little reckless. He speeds a little bit. Gets his license revoked. I think he has to have an SR-22 to get his license back. Why should the kid who's drinking and being caught intoxicated and having his license removed because of that, why should he get the license back without showing the same hurdle? Margo?
I think the distinction is that in these two situations, both the core revocation and the administrative revocation, it can occur for a non-driving offense. And it's the only time that we have driver's privileges being lost for possession of drugs or the minor consuming. And because it's a non-driving offense, they haven't tied the SR-22 up with it.
Further questions of the...
I just think it's important to at least have had the discussion. I should apologize to you. I should have thought of that earlier and come to see you about it. I would have had it the old age, I think.
That's what it is.
Well, we hope.
Representative Veazey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just comment that my understanding of the Department of Motor Vehicle Procedures is that they will not issue a revoked driver's license without proof of insurance. SR-22 is but one form of a proof of insurance. If your insurance company will give you a certificate of insurance, I believe that satisfies the administrative requirements of the Department of Motor Vehicles. SR-22 is a form you get when you're not eligible to get a policy other than from a high-risk pool.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. I think they will accept other forms. They don't have to have the SR-22 form.
Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to testify on House Bill 299?
I just wanted to make one other comment. This passed in 1988 the first time. I filed it in 1985.
You did what? I'm sorry?
I filed this bill in 1985. And we moved it to, actually, 86, I'm sorry, filed it in spring of 86. And because I was in the minority, it was not allowed a hearing, it was not allowed to move. Representative Ulmer filed 2 years later, and it moved just immediately. Only they
wonders
took
never
all
cease.
The good things out of it so it wouldn't work. Made a nice token statement to the public, but it didn't work. Judge Crask was the only one that ever even tried to really use it with any significance. That's why you had to come back now and repair it. I appreciate you having done so. Thank you very much.
Well, it's my intention to move this bill today, and if committee members agree with me, we'll move it on. Senator Miller?
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill 299 to the committee with individual recommendations.
Thank you, gentlemen.
No objections. House Bill 299 is discharged with unanimous approval for discharge. Take up next House Bill 497, an act relating to the titles, describe the two principal officers, executive officers of electric and telephone cooperatives. Do we have the chairman, the chairwoman, or vice chairman of some organization to...
Somewhere.
Chairman Logan.
Mr. Chairman.
I don't have a bill.
Mr. Logan's going to tell us why we need this.
Please. Mr. Chairman, my name is Jeff Logan from Representative Joe Green's office. Representative Green is the sponsor of the bill. Regrets he cannot be here at the moment. He's got fish board hearings down in House Finance, HB 199 up in Senate Finance, and then two bills up in House Finance, Fish Board and Resources. So
I just saw him out in the hallway.
He's kind of circuit riding on about four different rooms.
Couldn't accommodate him when it was convenient for him.
He should be back in just a few minutes, I would assume. Mr. Chairman, the current statutes require that the presiding officer of a board of a electric or telephone cooperative be called a president. This has created a small problem with the state's largest utility, which serves about 65,000 hookups, which is about 45% of the people in the state. And that is they move from their existing financing to the private sector financing, they find themselves in the corporate boardrooms and financial markets. And because they have to call the presiding officer of their board or president, that leaves them only being able to call their day-to-day manager, a general manager. And that general manager, although he or possibly she is the head of a large corporation that would typically garner a lot of respect on Wall Street, they find that they have difficulty getting in to see these people who might provide them financing when they're called a general manager. The bankers on Wall Street aren't interested in seeing a general manager. So it is the opinion of the cooperative that this problem could be rectified if we were able to call the presiding officer of the board, a chairman or chairwoman, as it were, which is common business parlance in today's world. And that would free up the title of president to go to the day-to-day operations manager. And that is why the bill is before you and what it does.
Any questions from committee members? Anybody in the audience wish to testify on House Bill 497? Mr. Markley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Larry Markley. I'm here representing both the Alaska Rural Electric Cooperative Association and the Alaska Telephone Association, the latter organization. Some of its members are telephone co-ops. I just would tell you that both the organizations and our members support the change. Jeff pretty much said it all. I'm a little embarrassed we even have to be here at the legislature taking your time up with this, but the thing was put in statute years ago, and as not just Chugach Electric and Anchorage, but some of these other systems begin to transition away from the federal loan programs, they're running into this little problem outside. So we would ask that you accommodate us.
Well, I think we can be accommodating. Senator Miller?
If you're waiting for a motion, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, does anybody else wish to testify on House Bill 497? Did you have a comment, Senator Taylor?
I just wanted to say that there are times when bills come through that, and as you know, we always talk in code in the legislature, and there's Ramona's bill, and everybody immediately knows it's sex registration, right? And there's other code words that we use for bills as they move through. There's the nickel bill, which, of course, is the 470 fund, right? I think this one should be called the Rodney Dangerfield bill. I get no respect. And with that, I'll allow that the Rodney Dangerfield bill should move from here.
After all, this is probably one of, you know, 5 pages of probably one of the most important bills that we've seen this year. And it's even politically correct, too.
I noted that.
This would be a good one to add a few things onto it, but I didn't have a chance to do too much thinking this morning. This
what
one,
did so. Representative Green send us last year?
Is this one of the key things on Representative Green's priority list for adjournment?
This is the adjournment
package. This is the adjournment package out of the House. I can
Mr.
See.
Chairman, I can only say that I'm glad to see it pass out today.
Well, we're keeping a chit sheet of House and Senate, and I'm glad that this is a House bill so we can put it over on the House side. Senator Miller.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill 497 out of committee with individual recommendations.
Any objection to the motion? Hearing none, House Bill 497 is discharged. Brings up House Bill 504, an act relating to sale of alcoholic beverages to military personnel.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tim Sullivan from Representative Mulder's office, and I have some very brief testimony on House Bill 504. Currently, Alaska statute requires that for military personnel to be served alcohol in patriotic organizations, that they be in uniform. This bill will simply eliminate those words so that off-duty military personnel can be served alcohol in patriotic organizations such as VFW halls and American Legion posts without having to be in uniform. Currently, they are not required by federal regulations. They are not required to be in uniform while off-duty, and this would just make everything equal.
Tim, can you tell me, have you had any testimony, letters, anything like that from like American Legion or VFW? That's probably in somewhere.
There should be one letter from the VFW in there supporting this, and the American Legion legislative program requesting, stating that this is one of their priorities for the year.
Well, this is another one that I'm glad it's the House bill.
This is another one on the priority list.
If you
you can hold just a second. We'll stand at ease. Testify on House Bill 504. Senator Miller.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill 504 out of committee with individual recommendation.
Any objection? House Bill 504 is on its way.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This must be our alcohol package.
This is the alcohol package for the year, right.
Next, SJR 50. Requesting governor file suit in the U.S. Supreme Court. Is there anybody here to testify on this?
Makes me feel better. I don't know.
Who? Oh, Dave? Are you handling this resolution?
Yeah.
Please join us. Oh, yeah, there it is. The Senate Rules Committee. I've got to read these things before I ask the questions.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Dave Thompson from Senator Halford's office. This resolution was introduced on request through Senate Rules, which is why we're here today, requesting the governor file suit, United States Supreme Court, alleging violation of civil rights of Americans listed as prisoners of war or missing in action, requesting other states join in this suit. There are, in fact, two Alaskans still listed in this category, Thomas Anderson, United States Marine Corps, and Howard Kozlowski, United States Navy. There is a companion House bill on the House side for Representative James, and apparently it's stalled, so they've asked us to get something moving on the Senate side in the hope of getting this through. I would just point out there's a zero fiscal note and that the American Legion Executive Committee voted unanimously on behalf of its 9,000 members to support passage of this resolution.
Any questions, Mr. Thompson? Anybody in the audience wish to testify on SJR 50? Committee discussion? Did I ever say that we're back in action? We are, anyway.
It's tough to tell with this committee.
Yeah, real tough. If you're looking for a motion, Mr. Chairman.
Senator
Mr. Chairman, I would move Senate Joint Resolution Number 50 out of committee with individual recommendation.
Any objection? Senate Joint Resolution 50, it's on its way. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll next take up House Bill 402. We heard this before, and this is the insurance bill, the SR 22 bill.
And it's identical.
It's the
piece of Michigan passed this one last year. It says, action on behalf of their citizens being held in captivity
we'll be at ease
in Southeast Asia.
In action. House Bill 402. I'd like to move this out of committee today.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill 402 out of committee with individual recommendations.
Any objections to the motion? Hearing none, House Bill 402 is on its way.
Check Norris says there's
we will last take up SCR 19.
Bad Miller.
This is the concurrent resolution necessary due to the title change in HJR 43. If you recall, that's the victims' rights legislation, and we added the phrase and to penal administration in the title, and we added a new section one in the resolution. We've heard that for a long time. Accompanying resolution to go along.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Miller.
I would move Senate concurrent resolution number 19 out of committee with individual recommendations.
Just before we take the vote, anybody in the audience wish to comment on SCR 19? Close the public testimony. Any objections to the motion? Hearing none, the SCR 19 is discussed from committee. Is there further business to come before the committee? If not, we will meet on Wednesday at 9 o'clock, and the calendar is posted. See you then. That ends the meeting.
Do you have any bills left?